From the moment I saw Lucius Pacelli, I wanted to go to bed with him. If I'd known then what Michael would put me through by way of penance in 26 years of marriage, you'd think if he'd needed so badly to spank me, he'd have found an opportunity. I might have simply given in. Instead, I spent 3 months in tortuous longing before succumbing to all I felt for Lucius. But retrospect is convenient, life less so. Even if I should have foreseen or already known of my husband's peccadilloes, I still could not have gazed into the future to know, say, the path that May's tornado would take across Iowa, straight through our daughter's wedding. I met Lucius in late January. I'd just arrived in Ohio for my semester's teaching exchange. He was recently back from a year and a half in France, a research sabbatical he'd extended with an additional 6 month leave. His work was on Nazi collaborationists of the Vichy regime, and he'd be headed back to France that summer. But when we met, it was only January. The Democrats hadn't even nominated someone to run against W and bar him from second term. Bernadette, the mother-in-law whose belligerent existence I'd suffered for more than half my life, was still alive and kicking me at every available opportunity. And Ginny wasn't yet married to Silas Yoder, or pregnant and off her psych meds, and once again as miserable as she'd been before the electroshock. Aura and Obadiah Yoder were already dead, Silas and Eula's parents, hit head-on and killed by an SUV in their own buggy in front of their own prairie farm. And a year had done little to dissipate that pain. The birth of Eula's baby had diverted us, yes. My point is this. When I met Lucius, my life was more stable than it had been in 25 years. I met him, and I wanted him more clearly and maybe less complicatedly than I think I've ever wanted anything in this life.
There's a lot of passion in this book, certainly in these opening chapters. So I wondered, when you were writing them, did you have to take like a cold shower between writing sessions? Or
I'm pleased to hear you say that it comes across like that. You know what? I wrote this book over such a long period of time that, you know, those times were so almost filtered out over so many years.
So you were like an old married couple by the time you finished.
Yeah, I mean, I started working on this book when I was in my very early 30s. I'm 45 now. When I started writing the book, I was in my early 30s, and Philippa, the narrator, the main character, was in the early drafts, she was 57. And gradually, as I had to sort of work things out, and as things do over 15 years of working on a book, she became younger. So Philippa is 50 now in the year that the novel takes place. And I'm 45.
Hey, 57-year-olds can have plenty of passion.
Absolutely. Oh, no, that was not the issue. There were many other logistical concerns of, like, wars falling at the right time and you know, the things that one has to take into account writing novels. But we kind of grew together. Like, she was much older than I. She was 25 years my senior when I started writing this book, and now we're almost the same age.
That's kind of challenging. You know, I've talked to people about writing cross-gender, but that's kind of interesting that you bring that up. You know, writing a different age group that you haven't even experienced yet.
But growing into it on my way there.
She took you there first. So this is your fifth book, correct?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Well, that's pretty cool that you have to stop and start counting.
Well, you know, I think it's the fifth one published, but I usually say
Is it really?
It's right. Well, there's the novel that was my MFA thesis that I still pull out, you know, and say someday. And then the third book was the Ex-Boyfriend Cookbook, which I did with a friend. So I sort of feel like that was the third and a half book.
The recipes that ex-boyfriends left with you.
Yes, ostensibly.
Yeah,
it's actually all fiction, and the recipes are mostly our mothers. But
what fun. That's a cool idea. So give us you read an excerpt, but give us a synopsis of what this novel is about and how all these many years ago you came up with the idea.
You know, I think what this novel is about is one of the hardest questions for me to answer still. In the very short version, I think it's kind of the story of a woman's midlife crisis over the course of a year. And it takes place, for the most part, the present time of the story is 2004, Iowa, during the very contentious election when Johns, Kerry, and Edwards were running against Bush, who was up for his second term. So that's the midlife crisis amidst the 2004 presidential election in Iowa is the short version. And then the longer version involves so much, like, in the course of that, there's a foray to Nazi-occupied France. And I think it's a novel also very much about the relationship between mothers and daughters, which seems to be what I write about even when I don't mean to be writing about it.
Since you took quite some time writing it, I'm wondering how you look at it now in hindsight, because now we're looking at very different and intense results of the last election, and you're writing about Bush Kerry. And so I wondered, if you look at it now from today, would you have written anything different, or...
Well, it's interesting. For so long while I was writing this, I felt like people were saying to me, "Thisbe, come on, you got to get over this. You got to this. You know, it's okay. We've got Obama. It's okay. Like, we're not, you know, the Republicans are never going to be able to take control again. It's oh, you know, that's another era." Everyone sort of thought, like, you got to get past it. And, you know, I still can't. I like Philippa, I'm still waiting for Al Gore to take his rightful place as president. So, you know, I mean, some of us are not really moving at the speed of everyone else. But, you know, there is something quaint now about our fears of W getting a second term. And they were very, very real fears at the time. I didn't mean to take as long as I took to write this book. I mean, maybe in some ways the current situation puts it in, I guess it certainly puts it in a different light, looking back at that election now, knowing where we've come. I'm not sure.
You just have to write a new one now and see how that...
Never, never, never.
So you said midlife crisis. We almost always hear when we associate midlife crisis with men. So is there something liberating about that? To a woman can lose it too.
Yeah, I think so. I guess that felt like my argument in some ways when I felt like people were saying, "Well, so, but it's kind of just about a woman losing it," and I was like, you know what? That's been really fertile territory for Philip Roth and Richard Ford, and they all get to write midlife crises, and it's regarded as legitimate source of literature.
Yeah.
Why can't I?
Yeah, why can't a woman be not so well behaved?
Well,
and you have photos in there that intrigued me. I mean, this is a novel. Where do the photos come from?
In very practical terms, the photos come from consignment stores, mostly in
Iowa. Kind of like they did for you.
Exactly.
Or am I giving away too much?
That's okay. It happens early on. I am someone, I'm a writer who is also very invested in other tactile arts, collaging. Now, photography has sort of taken over my creative side, but quilting. I also do a lot of in my classes and teaching. I work a lot with sort of physical objects, artifacts, photographs, letters, documents, things like that to help students enter into writing. And it's definitely something that I do myself. And
you'll wander through a thrift store and find a photo and start imagining a story?
Oh, yes,
yeah.
Yes, of
okay.
course. Or finding, you know, and not just photos, but...
A dress or
yes,
a lamp.
Yeah. So one of the photos, which was a photo of three little girls, was one that I found, and I don't even really know where I found it anymore. It may have been in this old album that I bought, a sort of a Victorian album that's described in the novel as well.
Yeah. Or
it may have been separate. I don't remember anymore. But it's this is very, very haunting picture of three little girls. And I couldn't help looking at this picture and thinking, who did these girls become? What were their lives?
You've said that writing isn't painful for you, that it's a pleasure. Is it easy for you? Or 'cause usually we hear about writers and that awful struggle and solitude.
You know, it's actually changed a great deal over time. I think writing used to be really just pure pleasure.
It's one of those things that the more you do, it becomes harder. At least I've found that to be true.
Yeah, I have not.
Or our standards keep rising?
I've not been able to do very much writing in recent years. My teaching job has taken over much of my, just the hours in the day. Mm. Having a young child, the life things that kind of get in the way. It feels harder these days, and I don't know if it will go back to feeling easy or joyous. I don't think I would do it if I didn't enjoy doing it. You know, you hear writers talk about, oh, I love writing because it's like banging your head against the wall. It feels so good when you stop, you know. And I don't think I could do it if it felt like banging my head against a wall. Once I'm in it, I lose track of time, and that's not something that happens with too many things in the world.
They say that's key, that one thing where you forget what's going on around you, that's your thing.
Yeah, although it seems to happen with quilting and photo editing more these days than with writing.
More than one thing. So does that sometimes inspire you to change from art form to art form and quilt for a while, and then that's probably a good time to think?
It does. Yeah, it does. I actually quilt and listen to audiobooks.
So there you go.
It's a different kind of headspace. My husband keeps telling me that when as much time and as much pain as went into this book, that I'm allowed to let that side of my creativity lie fallow for a little while, and we'll see. You start to feel like a fraud. A writer who's not writing starts to feel like a fraud. But he just yesterday he was saying, I know what next. It's that Jewish Pirates in Barbados novel. You have to do it. You have to do it.
All right. So you brought up Jay. You're married to a writer. In fact, we've had him here, too, on this show. And I think, aren't you doing your book tour together as well?
We are going to do some touring together.
You had your books come out at pretty much almost the same time. Is that a challenge to be married to another writer, or is it a wonderful thing because he gets it when you're lost in your own space? You can be each other's first eyes, or does it get competitive? How does that work?
It's only wonderful. I can't speak for any other writer marriages, but ours is the only one I know and love. I can't imagine any other thing.
No Lucius for you.
Yeah. No. No.
So you're doing a book tour together then?
Yes.
Okay. So talk a little bit about the book tour.
Well, you know, book tours apparently don't happen so much anymore.
That's true.
And when Houghton Mifflin Harcourt said they wanted to send me on some tour dates, that sounded wonderful. And we thought, well, let's see if we can piggyback Jay along for some of that. I don't like being away from him and our son. And we thought, well, let's.
So your boy is coming along.
He's coming along too. There may be a little bit that I have to do on my own, but for the most part, we're the Midwestern dates. It is a family tour. Sonna doesn't understand why his books have not been published yet, and I can see him wanting to claim some time at my Edgar Bone himself. We'll see how that goes. But we're doing the Midwest part, you know, driving it together. And then we're plotting a big California trip over spring break. So we're going to family trip to California to see a lot of old friends and ultimately to go to the Guardians of the Galaxy part of Disneyland, which a 7-year-old requires.
You're actually a native New Yorker, and you've spent time in Iowa partially for your education as well, but now you're in the Battle Creek area raising chickens. So how does a place affect writing, or does it? How do surroundings? There's a lot of inspiration in a place like New York, too, and there can be a lot of inspiration out on a farm.
I could never be a writer in New York. I got out of New York as quickly as humanly possible. I wrote my, at 18 or 17 at the time, I wrote my college essay for early decision to Oberlin, that I wanted to go to Oberlin because if you walked far enough in any direction, you'd hit a cornfield. You know, that was, I wanted out. I have not really gone back. So college in Ohio, and then very soon after, I just took a year between college and grad school and then went to grad school in Iowa and fell in love with Iowa and stayed for 12 years and only left when I met Jay, and he was living in New York.
We should say his whole name and his novel name.
Jay Baron Corvo. His novel is called The Standard Grand, published by St. Martin's
Press. So our listeners can read both of them side by side. Okay, back to you.
Back to the story after the shameless husband publicity plug. Jay was living in New York, and it was feeling like it was time I needed to get a job. I'd run out of money from the first books and needed. So we tried to wangle a way to be in the same place. And so we moved for a couple of years up to the foothills of the Catskills, where Jay's novel, The Standard Grand, is set, and lived there. And then I got this job at Western, and that brought us out here in 2010. The Midwest feels very, very much like home to me. And it every time someone goes to New York or spends some time there and sort of gives me a report, and I have that feeling, that reaffirmation of, I know why I live here. It is about the opposite of as far away from New York City as you can possibly get. And I think I appreciate that every day about the Midwest.
And your chickens do make a little bit of an appearance in this novel. But I'm waiting for one of you or both of you to write a chicken novel.
Well, my last novel, Osprey Island, which is my last novel that came out in 2004, I wrote before I actually had chickens. But there is a character in that novel who raises chickens.
There you
and
go.
I had to do all this research in order to do that. It was like I so desperately wanted to raise chickens, and the closest I could get at that point was to have a character who raised chickens. So,
okay. So I'm going to have to catch up on that one.
There are a lot of chickens in Osprey Island.
Any new projects that are underway?
Is it too soon to ask? There are always a number of things underway. You know, I've got a bunch of novellas that I've been working on, which is a form I haven't worked in too much, and I'm quite enjoying it.
So between stories,
animal based. Like I have a raccoon story, and I have a deer story novella.
See,
and
this is where the chickens might appear.
The chickens may come in here somewhere. We'll see. But then there is this idea of this early Jewish pirates landing in Barbados, and this may have to go somewhere. But we'll see. There's a chicken farm at the heart of the Jewish pirates in Barbados novel. But
so I get my wish. Well, thank you so much for coming in to talk with us, Thisbe. Enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Me too. I appreciate it.